Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. We're going college style today on a Monday, along with Aaron Fitt. My name is John Manuel. Thank you so much for joining us at BaseballAmerica.com or with the iTunes download. And we want to remind you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. Aaron, we may as well have gone to the Demo House today to do this top 25 ranking. I've been doing this for 13 years now here at Baseball America. In other words, so when most of our listeners who are in college were like in elementary school, so I know more about college baseball than they do, and it's very difficult to do a top 25 poll when you have a week like this.
Yeah.
And there's no right answer, and I'm not sure that we ended up with the right answer in our rankings this week, but I'm sure we put our name on a ranking every week, and we don't ever shirk that responsibility to take the easy way out. But I've never seen us have a debate like we had this week.
Yeah.
You think the healthcare debate was something we debated? This top 12 in our rankings, really the top 9 in the Baseball America top 25 rankings for 70 minutes today, and that was after taking a good half hour, everybody, to digest your worksheet coming into the rankings meeting, and you know, obviously, you and Connor going to games all weekend, me following it all weekend. We all invest a lot of time in this, and usually it doesn't take that long. Usually after 70 yeah. minutes, we're done doing the rankings and doing the podcast.
Yep.
So this might be a little bit of a quicker podcast because we've probably said everything to each other already. But
right.
Very difficult rankings from 2 to 9, Aaron. And have we ever experienced anything close to this?
No, we even had to use the whiteboard today. We had options, went through options A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and settle on option I, as it turned out, a last-minute amendment there.
The Fitt Amendment.
Yeah, call me the Bart Stupak,
that's
right?
That's right. It was. I will say that we were more civil and less contentious than the
Nobody shouted baby killer at me for what
nobody,
that's worth.
Nobody shouted you lied. But at the same time, we weren't debating something as important. So
this is true.
But Virginia was an easy number one, and the Cavaliers are going to be hard to move from number one because they're really good. But they do get challenged in conference play next weekend with Clemson.
Right.
Which won a conference series, went 4-1 on the week. And here's your reward, Tigers. You move down because the big matzo ball out there is UCLA and Arizona State. The Bruins are 16-0. The Sun Devils are 20-0, Aaron. You've written about both teams. I still think we're both pretty shocked that Arizona State is 20-0, not because they're not good, just because 20-0 is so hard to do.
Yeah.
And those two teams and that combined 36-0 is really what spurred this difficulty, because how do you keep those teams out of the top 10?
Yeah, and you know, Arizona State entered the week at number 10. And you know, a little history here. They came into the season ranked number 14. Okay, you can argue we were too low on them coming into the season.
Sure.
But we did it for logical reasons. They were without a guy who won a ton of games in, 16 years or whatever it was, 14 years? How long was he there?
The whole Pat Murphy situation would have lent itself.
Yeah.
It would have been very understandable for this team to get off to a slower or shaky start after the turmoil and the tumult of their offseason.
They were without the two-time Pac-10 Pitcher of the Year, Mike Leake.
Yep.
They were without the Pac-10 Player of the Year, Jason Kipnis.
Yep.
As it turns out, they've also been without their third All-American from last year, in Josh Spence.
They got a new catcher.
They have a new catcher. Carlos Ramirez was a key
very
part of that
good
team last
player.
Year.
Jorge Carrillo's good, but he's not Carlos Ramirez.
So there were some legitimate questions about this team. Obviously, we still thought they were going to be good. They were number 14. That means we thought they were a super regional team coming into the year, which means we thought they were two wins from Omaha.
Right.
We still thought they were a good team, but we didn't have them in the top five. And so it's been hard to move them up too far because, first of all, we have a pretty good top 12 here, John. There's 12 teams that are really deserving of being... You know, you could make a case for any of them in the top five. They've all been good.
None of the teams that we ranked high early in the year, with the exception of the two teams we ranked high that have come down, Rice and Fullerton.
That's right.
And they've both been hit as Fullerton's not been in the poll for 2 or 3 weeks now, and Rice is all the way down to 25 now.
Right. So this is not just stubbornness on our part. I mean, there are actually teams that were ranked highly because we thought highly of them, and they have played well.
Yeah.
That said... 20-0 is pretty impressive. Now, Arizona State, up until this point, also hadn't played as tough a schedule as Virginia or Florida State or, you know, some of these other teams, Texas. They hadn't left their home state until this week
right.
when they went to Cal State Fullerton and won two midweek games, and that was impressive. and it's a 5-0 week.
Even if Fullerton's struggling a bit, and they have been, and they're like we said, they're not in the top 25 team.
They're still Fullerton.
They're still Fullerton. They were an Omaha team last year. Yep. That was Arizona State.
And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them in Omaha again this year.
Right. It's still an impressive midweek sweep. If you're gonna put weight on midweek games, that's the kind of games you put weight on.
And they have wins over Oregon State and UC Riverside and Cal Poly. And as bad as Cal Poly has been, I mean, that's still a decent win. I mean, that said, though, John, Arizona State opened the season against Northern Illinois
and Towson. 7-30 combined.
Exactly. So there's that mitigating factor as well. But nonetheless, we thought 20-0, Arizona State really needed to come up. And so there's a lot of talk about whether we should put them at number 2 or number 3 or number 6 or number 8. We had them in all kinds of different spots. Eventually, I guess the consensus was we couldn't move them over Florida, which had a 5-0 week and has played a more challenging schedule. 5-0 week included a win over Florida State.
Right.
And so we moved Florida up to number 2. And the Sun Devils come in at number 3 as our last-minute compromise, which means that Georgia Tech, TCU, and Florida State all drop a spot after winning their weekends. But they all,
which we don't like to do.
We don't like to do.
We really don't like to do that.
But Georgia Tech did lose a game to Maryland, a team that they should not lose to.
Right. They lost a game, not just at Maryland, but they lost a game with Deck McGuire on the mound, which, when you have 14 starts with your number 1 starter, you kind of expect to go, in my mind, when it's Deck McGuire, if a team goes anything less than 12-2, 11-3 with him on the mound for the season, you'd be shocked. And they still have a very strong ACC schedule to play. They've opened up with Wake Forest and Maryland. You kind of think they should go 6-0 in those games, even with the one series at Maryland. So
Georgia Tech has played the weakest schedule of any of these top 12 teams.
No doubt. Losses to Maryland and Xavier, and we're not talking about Xavier on the basketball court. So, Arizona State was 14 to start the season, as you said, Aaron. They moved up 4 spots, and that's because Fullerton and Rice at 4-5 in our preseason rankings had dropped behind them, UC Irvine at 8, and South Carolina at 10. They'd really moved up those 4 spots. Everybody else, Texas, Virginia, LSU, Georgia Tech, Florida, Florida State, TCU, Coastal Carolina, Louisville, all those teams have had virtually the same success as Arizona State. The only difference is they aren't 20-0, but they're all 16-2, 17-3.
And if you put Arizona State, if they play Florida State's schedule, they're not 20-0. They're just not.
Florida State's played 11 top 25 teams. Yeah.
You put Arizona State with Florida – with their schedule, or Virginia's schedule, no way. There's no way. Nobody goes 20-0 against that schedule.
It's hard to imagine them doing that. And like you said, they have left the state of Arizona once.
Right. So. TCU lost one game to BYU. I mean, we're obviously very impressed with TCU, but we can hit them one spot to allow Arizona State to move up. Florida State, it's an impressive road series win against North Carolina. We hate dropping a team after a series win like that, but they did go 2-2.
That was the toughest one for me because Florida State has played a ferocious schedule to this point and has one bad inning basically all year, which was the 6-run ninth inning when they lost that series to Virginia.
I mean, that said,
they lost the series. A win is a win. A loss is a loss.
And they do have losses. Single losses to North Carolina and Florida and that 5-0 shutout against Virginia. So they have lost a few games, but that's to be expected with their schedule.
Right, exactly. To me, that's the one part of the Fifth Amendment at the end I wasn't 100%.
The Fifth Amendment, to be fair, John, had Arizona State at 2, Florida at 6. Everybody else stays the same. This was the post-Fifth Amendment that resulted in Florida State dropping a spot.
I guess you're right. This was like the Cooper Amendment.
I think it was.
Was it a Cooper?
Lingo. I think Lingo's responsible for this.
I think it was a Lingo Amendment. Man.
Lingo, who showed up 45 minutes into the meeting.
And still contributed for 30 minutes.
Yes, he did.
It's very difficult. I don't think – I mean, if it had been a chalkboard, it would have been like a Glenn Beck show. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy how much how many permutations we went through. And as with any compromise, everyone comes away a little frustrated.
Yep.
But we got something. We're putting our name behind it, and we're going forward.
And LSU stays number 7 after winning a really good series against Arkansas. In an ordinary week, we would like to move LSU up. This week, we could not. And how about this? Texas, wins its series against Nebraska. It's a conference series. It's at home. But they had a 2-2 week, and they drop from number 2 to number 8. Again, that's not ideal.
The biggest thing there is that out of these top 12 teams, Texas has the most losses.
Yeah.
That is the bottom line. They have the one least impressive weekend of any of these teams. However, it was opening weekend against New Mexico which the Lobos have been pretty good, but they did just lose a series to Utah.
Yes.
You know, it's not boxing. It's not this versus that. So then, it's not X and Y and Z.
The transitive property doesn't come into play.
That's the word. That's what you're looking for. It is what it is. And like I said, it's a compromise, and that means some people go home unhappy. Let's stop talking about how the sausage was made, and let's talk about the sausage and talk about some of these teams. And Aaron,
there's one more thing we should talk about.
If you think so.
Just UCLA. UCLA being number 9.
That's where I was headed. We haven't talked much about why UCLA is so good this year on the podcast, I don't believe. You've written about it. But part of me thinks that if UCLA played any of these teams best out of three anywhere in the country right now, they would win 2 out of 3. Because of Garrett Cole, Trevor Bauer, and Rob Rasmussen. I mean, and their bullpen depth. Is UCLA the best pitching in the country, and how much can you buy into UCLA after the best start in program history?
I think they're for real. And you know, their offense is a lot better, too. It's obviously the pitching is why they're so good. But their offense is a lot better. They've got some new faces in there that I think make a big difference. Some high-energy players that really buy into the Rick Vanderhook system. But on the mound, you could certainly make a case that they're the best pitching staff in the nation. I still think Texas has a lot to say about that. UCLA's pitching staff has been better than Texas's on the whole. Texas has played a tougher schedule.
They have, but they don't have the ballpark advantage that Texas has either.
This is also very true.
Texas is in an extreme pitcher's park, and UCLA is not.
It comes down to, for me, it comes down to those two for best pitching staff in the country. Take your pick.
I think it's a push. Garrett Cole, Taylor Youngman, that's a push. I think the rest of UCLA's weekend rotation is better than Texas's, and I think their bullpen is deeper. I would give a slight edge to the Bruins.
But they don't have a Chance Ruffin. Klein's been very good. Dan Klein's been very good. But
the bottom line is they don't have Augie Garrido. So John Savage, when you win 6 championships, you can call me, but you're not Augie Garrido. But you know what? John Savage doesn't pretend that he is Augie Garrido. He's got a little piece of Augie Garrido right now in his associate head coach, Rick Vanderhook. And that marriage of John Savage, elite recruiter, elite pitching coach, great track record in his history in college baseball, whether it was in Nevada, USC, UC Irvine, UCLA, developing pitchers, bringing them in. This is why we've always been on the John Savage bandwagon. I got off a little bit the last couple of years because UCLA was a constant underperformer. They're not underperforming now, and I think he's found the right combination. And Rick Vanderhook is a really great story there, too. This is the guy who was George Horton's right-hand man for a long time at Cal State Fullerton. You had Vanderhook, you had Serrano. It was kind of like Ray Tanner, who for years had Jerry Myers and Jim Thoman. And, his assistant coaches had this great success at South Carolina. Kind of same thing at Cal State Fullerton. Serrano goes off and gets the Irvine job. Now he's back at Fullerton. But when he came back to Fullerton and George Horton left for Oregon, there was some thought that Rick Vanderhook would be given the Fullerton program, and he was not. Fullerton as an institution chose Dave Serrano to be their head coach, not Rick Vanderhook, and that was uncomfortable, I think, for a lot of people involved.
Everyone.
And so kudos to Rick Vanderhook for putting the past. He's not here to talk about the past. He's focused on the UCLA Bruins and making the Bruins as good as they can be. And it is unusual to see UCLA as the best team in Southern California. That has not been their history. It's always been Southern Cal, or it's been Long Beach State, or it's been Fullerton, or it's been Irvine. It's been somebody else other than UCLA. But right now, UCLA is the best team in Southern California.
Sure.
I think it's really impressive, and they're going to be very hard to dislodge at the top of the Pac-10. And I can't wait for Arizona State and UCLA to play.
Yeah, and you know, and we did talk about moving them way up in the rankings, too. I mean, we had them at one point as high as number 3, but in the end, I mean, it just seemed a little more prudent to still be. Well, we moved them up, but we're a little more cautious still. They don't have the tradition. That Arizona State has the track record. That does count for a little something.
Here, but tradition does matter.
It counts for something.
And also, frankly, like Arizona State, UCLA has not played a great schedule.
Arizona State, I think they've played a good schedule, but not a great schedule.
Right. I mean, their best win is Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt and Oklahoma would be the two.
Right, and Oklahoma. That was Oklahoma State. They did play Oklahoma. My bad. Whataburger. The Whataburger Classic down in Corpus Christi. Man, it all feels like this is ground that we've covered, Aaron, but that's what happens when you have a 70-minute meeting. It's the Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. Thanks for listening. We Clemson, like I said, we dropped Clemson. Clemson UVA Aaron next weekend.
Handicap
that a little bit for us. I mean, Clemson is not doing anything wrong this year. I mean, they've been outstanding so far this season.
They've been outstanding. I think these two teams are very similar, offensively especially. They're both athletic and deep. And
Virginia Tech can really pitch.
Virginia Tech pitched
fairly well this weekend, and Clemson still swept that series. Jesse Hahn came into that weekend with an ERA under one, and they beat him 5-2. So
I think the difference between Clemson and Virginia, looking ahead, is that Clemson doesn't have the bullpen stability that Virginia has. Clemson has gotten good bullpen play this year, and they've got a lot of options and depth in there, but they don't have Arico and Wilson at the back to really shorten games up. Those proven guys back there.
Guys have done it in Omaha. Guys have done it in ACC play.
Yep.
Guys who are doing it this year.
And Clemson doesn't have Danny Holton. I mean, Casey Harmon's been great this year. He's been really, really good. He's been probably about as good as Holton, but he's not quite Danny Holton. He's not an elite guy.
Big X factor for me is, and we talked about it in the preseason with Clemson, is Kyle Parker.
Yeah.
I think Kyle Parker, I said in the preseason, if this guy had a big year, A, he could be a significant draft guy, and B, Clemson could jump on his back a little bit.
Yep.
This is a guy who hit 20 home runs as a freshman in the ACC, and that was after he entered school a semester early because he's also a quarterback. And this year, here he's Clemson's starting quarterback, so obviously he didn't play fall ball. He's jumped right in. He's having an amazing season so far with 9 home runs.
And the thing that leaps out is 17 walks and 12 strikeouts.
Yeah, 12
right?
strikeouts and 70 at-bats jumps out as a positive because it's a guy who struck out a lot last year. And, obviously he's getting into conference play. And, Virginia Tech and Virginia, two different balls of wax in terms of pitching. As good as Virginia Tech's arms can be, Virginia has arms and execution and history with these pitchers. So, big time matchup this weekend.
Very impressed with Clemson the last 3 weeks with sweeping Virginia Tech, very talented, sweeping North Carolina State, which is a good club,
club, but a good club,
and taking that South Carolina series, and those are the last 3 weeks. That's pretty darn good, and it's amazing we had to move them down a spot this week, but
yeah, not what we wanted to do. But again, it is kind of what it is. Aaron, and the rest of our top 25 rankings, Arkansas, LSU, we dropped Arkansas a little bit this week, but that's a huge series and a big bounce back for LSU this weekend.
Yeah.
As SEC play started, LSU wins a conference series after losing the series last week to Kansas. Kansas goes 0-4. It's not a good week to be a Jayhawk.
No.
I think it's more basketball. I think that their fans really care more about the basketball than the baseball, and I don't blame them, but a tough week for the
I have a feeling Jayhawks. A lot of them made that trip to St. Louis, though, for the series against the two-game series against the Billikens this weekend and came away heartbroken. But
you think so? That's awesome. I love they were actually in
not.
St. Louis. No, I think if Kansas had won the basketball, they would have been going to St. Louis this weekend in the Midwest. That's where the Midwest finals are going to be. So
but
St. Louis heartbreak all weekend for Kansas,
yeah,
for old KU. But Arkansas, LSU, anything jump out at you from that series or anything from the entire SEC weekend?
Yeah, Arkansas, after winning that first game, was in the driver's seat in that series, and I thought they were going to win that series.
I think the catbird seat is where they were.
The catbird seat. And I thought they were going to win that series after winning the opener. LSU showed a lot of toughness, and we knew they were tough. They won the national title last year, for goodness sakes. I thought that they did not have the pitching edge in any of those three games on paper, but they won the last two, and that's what tough teams do. LSU is really good.
I'll tell you what, it seems like their veteran lineup is really they still haven't even exploded yet.
No.
But they're still, even when they're not hitting on all cylinders, LSU can still score runs. They can still rally when they need to.
It's a lot like about this time last year.
LSU, yeah, you're right.
We said that we thought they had the best lineup in the country last year, and about this time they hadn't really performed like it, but they still were very dangerous. And at the end of the year, I think they proved us right.
I wonder what the spark will be for them this year, like it was last year when they moved a couple guys around, put Austin Nolan shortstop, slid LeMahieu over. Maybe Leon Landry getting healthier this year, being full-time in the outfield. What's it, a leg injury, a hamstring? He's got
yeah,
little,
I think he is back in the outfield now, though.
But, I wonder what that spark will be for LSU that when they really take off. But I think we fully expect it. South Carolina staying in the SEC, big series win this weekend against Tennessee. They pitched pretty well. Ole Miss with a big series win in the SEC this weekend in a ranked series at Kentucky, winning 2 out of 3. Although, again, Alex Meyer going to be pretty interesting to watch the next couple of years. in the Southeastern Conference. We have Vanderbilt losing a series this weekend. They're dropping. Anything else from the SEC weekend that stood out to you, Aaron?
I mean, Alabama. You know, you mentioned Vanderbilt. Alabama is in the rankings now, and I think they deserve it. It's a real nice week with you know, two midweek wins over John Manuel, Omaha sleeper, Minnesota.
That's not working out so well.
You know, Alabama's I've been very impressed with their pitching. I think that was our concern coming into the year, was how would the pitching hold up, and it's been really good. Adam Morgan, especially on Friday, has been outstanding, and I like moving Jimmy Nelson into the rotation. He was great on Saturday, so I like Alabama's
team.
They
have a great infield.
They do.
They have a veteran offensive and good defensive infield. It's not the greatest defensive infield.
Jake Smith hasn't even been hitting, really.
He hasn't even hit.
And they're still, you know, Josh Rutledge has been terrific. That's been, I think, the key. He's a great, great player.
One of those guys, I mean, I'd like to talk to a scout about him, but I bet you he has a little draft helium, because he's like a very solid college shortstop in a year where there aren't a lot of great college hitting prospects, and I've always kind of been a Josh Rutledge fan. I've always been a Ross Wilson fan. So those two guys are the keystone combination, very impressive. We brought in a couple new teams this week, Aaron. We brought in Alabama, as you mentioned. We brought in Western Kentucky and Texas A&M. Texas A&M really sounds like, again, this is a team that has had all kinds of arms the last few years. They bring in Stinson in the bullpen, the junior college transfer, who's just been wiped out in their bullpen.
Stilson,
thank you. And Barrett Lux looks like he might finally be back, and they still could get some help as the season evolves, if they get a little bit healthier.
Yeah, and, you know, they're a really dangerous team. I mean, they do have a lot of arms, and I think offensively they've got some spark plugs who've played a big – you know, who've done what some of the guys they had last year haven't done.
Right.
I mean, you know, Brody Green, first of all, has just been terrific. He's really an underrated player. He's kind of like Josh Rutledge for me, just a really good grinder, athletic college player who I think has a pro future, frankly. And also, you know, Tyler Naquin is a guy that a freshman that they were excited about coming in. He's been a little bit of a spark for them. I mean, some of their guys in the middle have been good. Patterson. I mean, the lineup is easy to overlook, but I think it's pretty solid.
And it's a pretty different club from last year's team that had a lot of expectations and did not live up to them. Did not live up to the high expectations that they had, that's for sure. And then Western Kentucky. I mean, what can you say about Western Kentucky? This was a team that was, you know, a Drew Pomerantz amazing performance away from winning a regional last year on the road against an SEC team. They lost a lot of their ball club. They lost a lot of the power off their ball club.
They did.
But they've come back, and they've got a legit 3/4 hitter in Matt Rice, their junior catcher. And it just seems like a program. It's Chris Finwood is the coach there,
that's
correct?
That's right, yep.
It just seems like it's a program, not a good team anymore. They're making that step from good team to good program when you are able to lose the kind of talent they lost and still come back the next year. Very impressive for them to win some of the games they've won this year.
Yeah, and that's why they're in, is they have some quality wins this year. I mean, they split two with Vanderbilt this week, but also, you know,
they beat Texas A&M this year.
They beat Texas A&M head-to-head. They beat Texas State and Baylor.
And Tennessee. I think they won two from Tennessee.
They won one from Tennessee.
One from Tennessee, okay. They split those two games with Tennessee?
I think they only played one against Tennessee. They lost to Mississippi State midweek. But, you know, I mean, 16-5, and they played a pretty good schedule.
4-1 against top 25 teams.
Yeah, that's impressive. So,
and that's not even including Texas A&M, which is now ranked.
That's right.
That's how we roll. It's ranked at the time. But if we try to do the evolving when they were ranked at that time or they've been ranked at one time, that'd be pretty tough.
I'm not sure that 4-1 is right, John, now that I think about it. But
okay. Well, we'll have to go back and look at that. That was one of the reasons why I ranked them. Amendment J. Are we on Amendment J now?
Yeah, that's what it would be.
It was a contentious week of ranking teams this week. And not contentious, difficult. And that's one of the great things about the college baseball is this will all be settled on the field. The rankings really don't matter a lot. But they are interesting and they are fun and they do help you kind of try to assess how these teams are going along. And so far we know the ACC looks pretty strong. The SEC looks pretty strong.
Pac-10
looks stronger than we thought. The Big West looks less so.
Yep.
Conference USA looks less so. And the Big 12, I think, is the other as a league where we had one preseason team
in the top
ranked,
25,
which was number one Texas. And now we've brought in, since that, Oklahoma and now Texas A&M. So the Big 12 is looking a little bit stronger than maybe we thought.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State's in the mix, and you know, Baylor's been okay. I mean, and Kansas State's gotten off to a good start against a soft schedule. So I think the Big 12 could be a little – I thought coming into the year that Conference USA might be better than the Big 12, and I don't think that's the case.
I would agree. Aaron, get to it on the three strikes on the top 25 rankings.
Yeah, got to pull up the socks and get after it.
You can join the conversation online. Aaron will chat this afternoon. Obviously, you can always join us at our Baseball America's Facebook page. Aaron tweets whenever he goes to a college baseball game all weekend. And you can always visit just good old baseballamerica.com and the college blog where Aaron Fitt rules the internet. We want to remind you, though, that we recorded this podcast here in the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook. And when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right. Visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast. So long, everybody.